Michael Palin, the Travelling Comedian. In this radio programme, you're going to hear some new words. Read and listen to them. Make sure you know what they mean. Scholar. Engage. Abuse. Ready? Now read the questions on the next page. Read them carefully before listening to the radio programme.
Good afternoon, Michael, and welcome to our programme.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here today.
Michael, many British children have been inspired by your taste for adventure. But when you were a child, did you experience travelling and adventure yourself?
No, not really. I was living in Sheffield then, in the north of England. And unlike now, when you can probably get on a plane for £10 and go across Europe, travelling was very expensive and there was very little chance for me to go anywhere. So I was really travelling through other people's experiences and through geographic magazines and programmes on television and things like that.
Where does your passion for travel come from? Is this a family thing?
No, not really. They are not great travellers. But I found a notebook belonging to my Irish great-grandfather. He was a scholar at Oxford University, and he once went walking on his own in the Alps. and he left behind his diaries for when he was about 38. And he very much liked what I like, really, what he saw and what he enjoyed, you know. Well, there was a fellow spirit, you know, and he loved getting away, and he loved the mountains and all that. I think with travel, I do love landscapes, you know, and I can find places that are beautiful, spectacular. But it's usually people that engage me most of all.
Your first career was in acting. Did you acquire your passion for travel at the same time as your taste for drama and comedy?
Yes, I did. I mean, I remember the excitement of feeling that we were doing something like Monty Python, and this would take us abroad to do some filming. We went to Tunisia, I remember, to film The Life of Brian, one of our films. And then we went to America to do publicity for it, and ended up in New York, Los Angeles. But I didn't really feel I was seeing much of the world. I was seeing the inside of television studios, hotels, conference centres. And then, suddenly, you'd be at home again. So in a way, I had the opportunity to travel, but it wasn't the right kind of travel.
How has being a professional comedian helped you? And what has it taught you?
I think being a comedian probably gives you a certain freedom when looking at the world. As a comedian, you know, your job is to comment on things or see human things going wrong that other people might take terribly seriously. And I feel sometimes as a comedian that I am on the outside looking in, and it's quite useful. I've found it especially useful during my travels.
Really? Are you suggesting that humour is somehow related to travelling?
Yes, indeed. Humour is something that is shared all over the world. And you know you can make as big an idiot of yourself as we all do, you know, not learn the language, not learn the customs, do all sorts of wrong things according to another culture, and yet, if you can do it with humour, it somehow brings you closer to people, and everyone says, well, never mind, we all do things like that.
Your first trip round the world became a successful TV programme, but I believe it was originally all planned by the BBC. What was the experience like?
Well, in fact, I was very uncertain of what we were going to do. When I was offered the journey, they said, we're going to actually see if you can get around the world in 80 days. And all I heard was, we will be travelling around the world. And I thought, well, yes, yes, I'll do that, fantastic. The BBC can organise it for me. What I wasn't really hearing was that there was going to be a camera there all the time. You're going to have to interview people, but there was no script. It was all going to be all based on me improvising. I'm just going to meet people and talk to them. And I thought, would anyone be interested? How are we going to do this? So until we got going, I was really very worried.
You must have seen places on your travels where the environment has been abused. Do you think our society should do something about it?
Well, I don't believe in interference without consultation. You know what I mean. I don't think we can say, well, we know the answers and this is what you should do. I don't think we can impose our way of life on anyone else. So you have to understand why people are the way they are, why they live the way they do, and also learn lessons from poor people.
What kind of lessons?
For instance, we have a lot more than we need and we produce a lot of waste. So I suppose at the end of the week, I send off about 20 plastic bottles of water to be recycled. But if you throw away one plastic bottle somewhere in Africa, people will pick it up and use it. And I think this is exactly what should happen. So I think we can learn lessons about how to look after the planet from people who have less, rather than from people who have more.
Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time. Thank you, Michael, for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Michael, and welcome to our programme.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here today.
Michael, many British children have been inspired by your taste for adventure. But when you were a child, did you experience travelling and adventure yourself?
No, not really. I was living in Sheffield then, in the north of England, and unlike now, when you can probably get on a plane for £10 and go across Europe, travelling was very expensive, and there was very little chance for me to go anywhere. So I was really travelling through other people's experiences, and through geographic magazines, and programmes on television, and things like that.
Where does your passion for travel come from? Is this a family thing?
No, not really. They are not great travellers. But I found a notebook belonging to my Irish great-grandfather. He was a scholar at Oxford University, and he once went walking on his own in the Alps, and he left behind his diaries for when he was about 38. And he very much liked what I like, really, what he saw and what he enjoyed, you know. Well, there was a fellow spirit, you know, and he loved getting away, and he loved the mountains and all that. I think with travel, I do love landscapes, you know, and I can find places that are beautiful, spectacular. But it's usually people that engage me most of all.
Your first career was in acting. Did you acquire your passion for travel at the same time as your taste for drama and comedy?
Yes, I did. I mean, I remember the excitement of feeling that we were doing something like Monty Python, and this would take us abroad to do some filming. We went to Tunisia, I remember, to film The Life of Brian, one of our films. And then we went to America to do publicity for it, and ended up in New York, Los Angeles. But I didn't really feel I was seeing much of the world. I was seeing the inside of television studios, hotels, conference centres. And then, suddenly, you'd be at home again. So in a way, I had the opportunity to travel, but it wasn't the right kind of travel.
How has being a professional comedian helped you? And what has it taught you?
I think being a comedian probably gives you a certain freedom when looking at the world. As a comedian, you know, your job is to comment on things or see human things going wrong that other people might take terribly seriously. And I feel sometimes as a comedian that I am on the outside looking in, and it's quite useful. I've found it especially useful during my travels.
Really? Are you suggesting that humour is somehow related to travelling?
Yes, indeed. Humour is something that is shared all over the world. And you know you can make as big an idiot of yourself as we all do, you know, not learn the language, not learn the customs, do all sorts of wrong things according to another culture, and yet, if you can do it with humour, it somehow brings you closer to people, and everyone says, well, never mind, we all do things like that.
Your first trip round the world became a successful TV programme, but I believe it was originally all planned by the BBC. What was the experience like?
Well, in fact, I was very uncertain of what we were going to do. When I was offered the journey, they said, we're going to actually see if you can get around the world in 80 days. And all I heard was, we will be travelling around the world. And I thought, well, yes, yes, I'll do that, fantastic. The BBC can organise it for me. What I wasn't really hearing was that there was going to be a camera there all the time. You're going to have to interview people, but there was no script. It was all going to be all based on me improvising. I'm just going to meet people and talk to them. And I thought, would anyone be interested? How are we going to do this? So until we got going, I was really very worried.
You must have seen places on your travels where the environment has been abused. Do you think our society should do something about it?
Well, I don't believe in interference without consultation. You know what I mean. I don't think we can say, well, we know the answers and this is what you should do. I don't think we can impose our way of life on anyone else. So you have to understand why people are the way they are, why they live the way they do, and also learn lessons from poor people.
What kind of lessons?
For instance, we have a lot more than we need and we produce a lot of waste. So I suppose at the end of the week, I send off about 20 plastic bottles of water to be recycled. But if you throw away one plastic bottle somewhere in Africa, people will pick it up and use it. And I think this is exactly what should happen. So I think we can learn lessons about how to look after the planet from people who have less rather than from people who have more.
Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time. Thank you, Michael, for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.